Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to In the Know with Mo. I'm your host, Maureen Porte. Today, joining me with Truth and News with publisher, editor, James Taylor, is my co-host, Rhonda B. Woods. Rhonda B. Woods is an educator, an actress, a talk radio personality, and a photojournalist. And she's joining me as we interview Mr. James Taylor from Taylor Publications. So I want to take this time to welcome James Taylor and Rhonda B. Woods to In the Know with Mo. Welcome, you guys.
Thank you.
Welcome, ma'am.
Appreciate being here.
Hey, you know what? It's a Mr. Taylor, I'm telling you, Rhonda and I both have been in and out of Pembroke. And I know you have a long history of it, but all of a sudden there's a whole lot of history, a whole lot of noise being made about that little town out there. And so that's why we want to welcome you to In the Know with Mo, so we can find out what's going on and what's not going on and what can we do. But I want the people to know that your Taylor Publications, the City News, is a weekly newspaper serving Kankakee, Bradley, Bourbonnais, and it was established by you and your wife, Marva, a husband and wife. And it was found, July 2nd, 1972, in Pembroke Township. Yes. So tell us a little something about what's going on out there. Tell us about what we can expect to see, some changes.
Well, one of the new things that happened is Senator Patrick Joyce, along with a lot of help from other legislators, including the Illinois Black Caucus, has gotten funding to put natural gas lines into the village and eventually into the rest of the township, which should open up the opportunity for some industry and certainly will make it cheaper and easier for individuals to take care of their homes, heat their homes, cook, and that type of thing. Usually people were using bottled gas, which is very expensive. So the natural gas lines opens the door for development.
Okay, well that's been a long time talking about too anyway, hasn't it? That gas line. I remember Reverend Jackson coming out there, and I know he didn't have nothing to do with this discussion, but it just seemed like back in the day, many moons ago. And I know you've been very active out there.
Well, actually, Reverend Jackson worked along with a group of us, including Senator Joyce, the mayor of Hopkins Park, Mark Hodge, and some other individuals to get the gas lines this time. He came back, spent some time there.
Okay. Now, you're a product of Pembroke, am I correct?
Yeah, I grew up in Pembroke. That's why we started the paper there. I wrote my first article for a newspaper when I was in the fifth grade. Publisher of the local paper, Mrs. Victoria Bentley, came to our school following a number of accidents involving a train that was constantly running through the township and didn't have any warning signals. And I wrote an article about it and about the deaths of some friends. She sent it to the company that ran the trains, and they decided they would spend the money to put the lines, warning signals up. And that sort of hooked me into writing. That's why I wrote.
Okay. You know what? Education is powerful. So let me ask you, some years ago there was a proposed building of a, was supposed to be a single cell women's prison. Whatever happened with that?
Well, the governor at that time, Governor Blagojevich, decided that he didn't want to build it. We had already gotten all the infrastructure for the prison. Actually, the prison, had it been built, it was a women's prison. We had already gotten approval from the Department of Correction to build some homes near the prison so that when the women were nearing the time to leave or had children, that they could have off-prison visits. It was going to be a wonderful thing for the women and their children. And for some reason, he came and decided that it shouldn't be built. And as you know, his history is not a very admirable history for a governor. So maybe that was part of the reasoning. It's just sort of crooked.
No, because he ended up serving time. So whatever happened to that land? Was it ever developed? Was that land ever developed?
What actually happened is the mayor of the village at that time, who is now the Pembroke Township Supervisor, but at that time he was the mayor, Mr. Sam Payton, Mayor Payton, worked with the state of Illinois to get the land donated to the village. I think he's got the land donated to the village for roughly 100 years. So they're using it to develop whatever they want to develop on it. I think it was a lot of acres of land. I think 50 acres, probably around 50 to 100 acres of land. I'm not certain.
And with that women's prison, if it had been built, it would have brought in a lot of revenue. A lot of revenue.
Yes, it was. A lot. You know, it would have changed the whole concept of the community because there would have been a lot of spinoff things, restaurants, hotels for visitors, motor pool, gasoline sold to people coming and going as well as to the prison. But, you know, like I said, when Blagojevich decided against it, he came there and made a good speech about what he was going to put there in place of the prison, but none of that ever developed.
Mm-hmm. Now, Rhonda and I had a conversation some time ago with a family, with a mother who lived in, where was it, Rhonda? Inglewood area?
They moved out there?
They moved out there.
Yeah. But, yeah, she moved from Inglewood out there, but that was many years ago. Those kids good and grown by now.
Yeah, but the issue is, even though it's been many moons ago, parents were moving from Inglewood, this is one example, to Pembroke to raise their children. They thought that it was a safer environment. And even though the kids are grown now, and I don't know why they felt that moving from Inglewood to Pembroke, which was many moons away from anything, was a safer environment. And people are still trying to move, purchase property and purchase land there. I know the black farmers are really, Reverend, what's the guy's name, Reverend Sampson, one of the black farmers, does he grow products?
Yeah, Reverend Sampson has been very active in Pembroke for several decades. In fact, when Pembroke was incorporated, the village of Hopkins Park in the early 70s, the first mayor was a Reverend Austin Timms, and Reverend L. Sampson helped him. The reason I'm aware of that is because we circulated the petitions to get the village incorporated, and Sampson was very involved. In fact, he did some work in Washington, D.C. on behalf of the village of Hopkins Park and Mayor Austin Timms. He's been very active, and he's a very supportive individual.
When I was out there, Taylor took me on a tour of Hopkins Park, we had stopped by, and Taylor chatted with this gentleman. I don't know if you're going to remember this, Taylor, because it's been so long ago. The gentleman's name was Eugene Thomas, and he was from Hopkins Park. Been a while.
I know the name. I'm not certain if it's the same individual, but I know Mr. Thomas.
Yeah, Eugene Thomas, yeah. And he just introduced me to him. You know, he was just saying how long he had lived out there, why he lived out there, and, some of the things. And at that time, they thought the prison was coming, and, some of the benefits and things that they thought was going to take place helping, because he loved living there. He just had wanted a role. And so you know, one
of the things about Pembroke, the demographics have been changing in the last decade. It's gone to from about 95% African American down to probably 70%. The other percent would be Hispanic and white.
Yeah.
Oh.
There's a very large Hispanic population there. And they've been doing a lot of development in the area and a lot of farming. And, you know, they really contributed to the growth of the area. It would be interesting
now,
to see how it.
Did you see on the news, Taylor, where they had those gentlemen that was there, they're farmers. They have farms they set up. And they were at PUSH when Northern Illinois Gas was there or was talking about bringing in the gas line. And these gentlemen sold their property in Beverly, I think the gentleman lived, and moved out there, and he's farming there. But then he said that they're opposing, they don't want the gas line. Have you seen that? Did you see that on the news?
Yes, I know the individual, Mr. Carter. I think it's Ron Carter. I think what you're dealing with is a combination of aspirations. He wants to farm. Other people want to live there and have some of the things in life that some people take for granted. Most people would be in Illinois or in America at this point, they're using natural gas. They're not using oil, and they're not using wood. When I worked for the Department of Children and Family Services, and this is like maybe in the 1996, I had a case where people were very poor, and they were heating their homes using discarded automobile batteries because they burn. They burn like beyond anything you could imagine once they get to burning, red hot. Kept the home very warm, but the reason I became aware of it was the children had high lead in their blood, and it was affecting them. And that's when I decided that I would work on trying to get some alternative fuel for that community. And, you know, we helped that guy, but there were others who I didn't know about who were using fuels to heat their homes that was really hurting their children. You know, it's two sides to every story. Probably most places you can have natural gas and you can farm. I mean, that's what is happening all over the country. I'm sure they'll work that part of it out.
Okay, yeah. Well, I'm hoping so, because when I saw that on the news, well, first of all, he was with the Rainbow Push Coalition when they were trying to get the gas company to come, and then now that he's a resident there, and then he's saying don't come. You know, we can't do things that's only a solo act. I mean, because obviously there's a reason for years they've been trying to get to come. And then his farm, you know, nobody's going to disregard that, but you got to sort of meet in the middle and not just try to do what's a solo act for, you know, his mission of farming is what I was thinking.
You know, when I grew up out there, we did a lot of farming. And we worked for a lot of the white farmers because they had the bigger farms and all that. And one of the things they did is they use gas to, you know, if you have corn in a silo, then if you don't keep that corn warm, it will mildew. And they use gas to keep it from mildewing. So the natural gas would help a farmer as well. You know, it's not a matter of you can't, because the pipes are under the ground. You're not going to plow that deep into the ground to ever impact the pipes. And they're small aluminum or copper piping, so it's not like it's going to be an environmental hazard. I think sometimes folks don't take the time to fully understand what's happening. And if you just moved out there, then you haven't lived out there in the wintertime when you didn't have fuel. The bottle gas truck couldn't get down the bad road because of the snow, so your home was cold. You know, and they talk about saving the trees, but those are the same trees people be cutting down to heat their homes with when they don't have natural gas. So it's a give and take all the way around. But my assessment, having grown up there, having worked there for the last 50 years in different capacities, the natural gas is a needed thing. It's a needed thing, and it'll change the community by leaps and bounds.
Are there any other communities that you're aware of that do not have natural gas beyond Hopkins Park and Pembroke?
No, not another. Pembroke Township, interesting fact about Pembroke, it's 56.2 square miles large. You could reasonably fit most of the city of Chicago in that land. 56.2 square miles is a lot of land. That's a big area. In fact, it's the largest township of the 17 townships in Kankakee County. It's one of the largest African-American governed areas in this country.
So now, in addition to the gas and with all the conversation about the solar panels now, is that something also that you've been investigating or looking into as part of the growth for the community?
We've used solar panels in Pembroke for the last 20-some years. And in fact, we would raise the plants. You know, when you're going to plant some beans or something, you got to start out with a little bean and a little cup. And we would put them in this building that was heated with the natural, you know, with the solar. We had our own solar building out there. And we were getting some help from various schools and universities on how to set it up. And it's, you know, one of the things I'm told they will use some of the prison land for is to put the solar panels there to provide electricity to the to the electric company. That, you know, going to sell it to the electric company, it'll sell it back to the people.
Yeah, and then I was just thinking about jobs for the, you know, young people as they were up and coming, because by that being enough, you know, the, a future part of our industry, then they could get the training, you know, do some apprenticeship program.
Yeah, I think that's one of the major things. There's a program now called the Kankakee County Youth Intervention Program, headed by a man who grew up there also, John Howard. Rhonda, you may have met John
some time ago. Yeah.
And he's working that program. He also runs the Melissa Daycare Center, which is a very modern facility. And there are people who are making efforts to upgrade the community, mainly individuals that grew up there who had to come back and do something. And he's one of those who stands out because he's invested quite a lot of money in that community. Another individual is a Mr. Conrad Robinson, an ex-veteran, who has opened up a black veterans organization there that's been reaching out in the last two to three, maybe 4 years to do various projects in the community to help provide alternative things for the young people to do other than to just languish in a rural community with nothing to do. It's very important that there be activities, you know, keep them moving, keep them interested in their future.
What's the population of Pembroke?
Well, that's been debated for years based on the census. The Pembroke population changes in the summertime. In the, for example, individuals in the areas, the suburban areas of New Chicago, people from Michigan, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, they send their kids out there for the summer. So you may almost double the population in the summer. So in the regular year, it might be about 8,000. And in the summer, it can go anywhere to 16,000.
You're sending kids down south. But now, you know, Taylor, you were pretty active and involved in keeping up with the when they were having the big discussion about the third airport there in the Piattone area. Now, Robin Kelly, you know, since she's in Congress, a seat that you also at one point ran for. And they're rebirthing the conversation about the third airport because, you know, Amazon wants a third airport. Now, have you been keeping up on that, or do you know anything of that? Because that, too, will roll over and help with jobs of some of the young people in the Kankakee, Pembroke area.
You know, there's a group out of Chicago headed by Mr. Al Penn, who has been working diligently since that whole project started. And he's come up with some very interesting ways to get it done, as well as provide some opportunities for young men and women who live in the area. I think that they're almost at a point where they can do it this time. I think they've satisfied all the hands that's reaching out in different directions. A friend of mine, Mr. Bilt, he built a private airport. Jet, he got a beautiful couple of private jets. He runs a company. trucking company. And he's very active in the Piatone area. I think his wife, she sells cars. She's got a big car dealership. But long before any of these people ever put a shovel in the ground, this man has built. I mean, he's got multiple silos. He's, like I said, he's got a couple of private jets. People are coming there now. You know, I was sitting there one day, give you an example. I pulled up to talk to Jim, and I parked in the wrong place, and he ran out and said, James, got to move the car, move the car. I said, what's up? He said, they're going to be landing. I said, landing. So I moved the car. No, about 10 minutes later, two women, well, small plane, prop airplanes, landed there, got some gas. They had come in from Canada. So he's fueling planes, private planes going everywhere. They're using that as a fueling station. So when they were talking about they couldn't build an airport, this man already did it. He did it with his own money. You ought to go out and look at it. Matter of fact,
I would like to do a tour for that, Rhonda. I'd like to go out there and check that out.
Christelle.
I'm pretty
Allen.
Sure I've seen that already when Jimmy Young was alive. I think we went there.
We did a video, Christelle and I. We interviewed him and some more people and did a video. I'll send it to you, Maureen, and you can look at it. Of his airport and the stuff that he did. And if you want to meet him, I'll introduce you to him. I think it'd be a good public interest thing.
Yeah,
it might spur some people to get up and go ahead and build an airport, you know, if this one man can do it. It's modern. It's not no shade tree type of thing. It's modern airport.
Okay. Alpine and McCowan's been out there to see that? I'm sure they've been out there
Pardon
to see
me?
That. Alpine and McCowan, they've been out there. I'm sure they've been out there to meet with the gentleman.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure, yeah. Yeah, it's no question. I would be shocked if they hadn't.
Mm-mm. Yeah,
let's talk about what's going on with the diversity changing out there. You know, you mentioned earlier about the increase of the Hispanic population. And with that increase of the Hispanic population brings a lot of other problems, one being a language barrier if they're coming not having the English language as the first language, but Spanish as the first language. And so you come into a lot of reports of sex trafficking is happening out in that area.
Yeah, I've had a lot of negative experiences and some positive efforts. We've rescued several young children. In the last year, maybe rescued four or five young people. And the language barrier, but one of the things that one has to look at, language does not seem to be a barrier when somebody's trying to help a child. Because I've dealt with people who spoke no English, and I speak no, but we saved them kids. Mm-hmm. We got somebody to be the middle person. And what's interesting to me, and one of the things that I find very frustrating, is that a lot of this stuff is going into Kankakee County, but it's coming out of Harvey, Robbins, University Park, Markham, Dalton. You know, it's not just a problem for Kankakee and Pembroke. It's something that, you know, I would think the state of Illinois, the state police, or somebody would really focus in on it.
Yeah.
Because these kids are being sold. And some of the parents, we had one case where the man sold his little boy for some meth. Sold him for some meth. If we can know this and we can get in there and we can help, then you know good and well some real estate investigators with the time and the resources could really bust this thing open. And it's not a small-scale thing, and it's not an all-Hispanic thing. We had one woman, very wealthy woman, driving a Bentley. White woman driving a Bentley from one of the collar counties. And she had bought this little girl for her own purposes. And we were busting her. But, you know, it's a very, very lucrative thing for these people to sell these children. You know, they're not playing and it's a dangerous thing. And it's some people get hurt real bad. Physically, when they get involved in this or try to save these kids. And a lot of times with the Hispanic community, what we've had to do is get the child saved and then get them out of Illinois, because most of the people involved in this are not going to be United States citizens. So that's one of the reasons they don't go to the police. Once they found out there were people like us, they come to us. But then, you know, undocumented. So we end up getting them into this west, out west. And we've got contacts out there. We have a newspaper in Dallas called El Sol. And we've been able to, and it's a Spanish language newspaper. And what we do is we use El Sol to make the connections.
Wow.
I have a comment here from Sharon on sex trafficking. She said, Sharon is from Chicago. She says she was a victim of sex trafficking when she was a teenager. And she, too, her mom sold her for drugs. It's amazing. She's grown now, she says, but she was part of the sex trafficking. And it went on and on and on. So we don't know
the story.
It's
a lot of hotels and stuff.
Well, exactly.
You know, in north of Kankakee and some of the black communities, it's a lot of knowledge in certain areas that they could stop it. They know when these people come to these hotels with these kids, they are not their children. They know that.
Exactly.
And they know exactly what's going on. So, you know, if we're going to deal with it, we got to get up front with it and call it like it is. And we got a lot of our people, our own people, that's helping to facilitate this mess. It's not just the punks in the street. Some of these people are wearing nice suits and driving big, nice cars. You know, living in some nice homes, and they're doing it. It's not no, you know, low-level type of situation.
Assisted Mary Bonnet, who does a lot of sex trafficking, in rescuing a couple of kids out of Bronzeville. And the house that these young ladies were in, I mean, beautiful, huge house in Bronzeville. But, and you're right, it's not the thugs in the street. It's the people with these good jobs that are, you know, sex trafficking is a bigger commodity than drugs. And
right.
I was like shocked to see that these were business people that were selling, that had these young kids, 11 and 12 years old, you know.
Right.
And how do you continue to educate the parents? You know, my young cousin, whatever the reason was, we want to blame it on sex trafficking, but she was like out here in the street too. But, and the more you talk to family members and people about it, it's like they don't listen because You don't know what's going on. But I recall the young person from your town was found here in Harvey. And, in fact, there's another case. The detective, new detective that just joined Harvey, is working on some more cases of sex trafficking that's popping up in Harvey.
But, you know, one of the things that people don't seem to understand is a lot of this is involving our young boys.
Yeah.
It used to be mainly the girls. Now, the little boys are in just as much danger as the little girls. In fact, in some instances, they may be in more danger. Because, number one, they don't expect it. And they're not being taught. And the people are professional child molesters, pedophiles. They're not amateurs. They know how to do what they're doing. And they know how to get them. They may get them with a pair of Jordans first. You know, they may entice them with a pair of Jordans or some tickets to a game or anything. You know, I had one case where the man bought him a four-wheeler. Bought the kid a four-wheeler. And the parents are sitting there like they're, excuse me, I don't want to get emotional about it, but the parents sit there like they're stupid. Now, you know, your child show up with a four-wheeler and you didn't buy it. You know where they cost $2,000 and $3,000. Where is this going to come from? And then you pretend like everything's all right. Come on. So when they start jailing some of these people, they need to jail some of these parents. Because it's the excuse that I didn't know. You knew you didn't buy that. You knew you didn't buy this jewelry. You know that child been gone for 7 days, and you don't know where she is or he is. He's gone,
and
it's your child, you don't know his stuff.
And some of the boys, when they're rescued, a couple of kids that were rescued boys, they were dressed as girls. You know,
right.
they But the boys is a big to do. It's not so much as the girls, it's the boys. And you should see
right.
some of the instruments they use to break these kids. You know, they they use all type of funnel-like contraptions that they insert into their rectum and the vaginas to break them.
Right.
And, I mean, it's just a whole torture thing. So, I mean, more information, more forums, more talking to it needs to be included in a curriculum in the school, too. And I don't want to continue to put more pressure on teachers because they have a lot already. But something has to be done if they incorporate sex trafficking as part of the health program in the schools, part of the gym, because they need to be educated and informed. But they're picking them up. If it's not by gym shoes or a four-wheeler, they can give them a juice box or a bottle of water.
That's right.
And it
has
drugs
in
it. Yeah.
Right.
But you know
that.
What? And then, too, it's just the mental thing because we had one of my students were a victim of being sex trafficked right there in Harvey. And, the, you know,
mm-hmm.
even once she was rescued, she was returned back to school, mentally, do you know her alliances was to them, the traffickers? She would not tell
yeah.
on them. She wouldn't tell who they were. She wouldn't tell you anything about them. As a matter of fact, she just told the kids at school, point where she actually believed it herself, that one of the traffickers was her boyfriend. And
oh,
if something
yeah.
happened, she would, yeah, if something happened, she would get upset. She would literally try to get in touch with him or track him down. Or, you know, when they moved her, she, you know, they had to keep moving her because she kept telling the trafficker where she was.
Yeah,
they use those kids to recruit other kids.
Yeah, and it's like a mental thing that they get control over their mind.
Well, they use them to recruit. See, if a kid
mm-hmm.
shows up with the right trinkets, then they are going to entice their friend. You know, Sally going to tell Joyce how she got this diamond ring and this necklace and whatever it is that they want to get at the time. And her friend
mm-hmm.
ends up with her. And like I said, it comes back down to communications many times, not all the time, but many times a parent and the parent's communication with their child. Because
mm-hmm.
once that breaks down, then you're opening the door for somebody to be in that role. And these people are good at it. They come in, they're kind to them. They lead them into this so smoothly that down the road, and it is too late. And they build
yeah.
up, like you said, they build up a loyalty to that perpetrator. You know, they don't really
yeah.
see the perpetrator like we see it. Here's
exactly.
somebody
that's
giving
what
them
I'm
stuff.
Trying to make, yeah. yeah, they see them as they're safe. Like in my student's case, her mom had one point had been strung out on drugs. So it's like
mm-hmm.
They were the girl's savior. And
right.
she literally, because compared to the life with her mom, some kind of way, it's really interesting when you're up close and personal. That's one of the reasons why it's not so simple, because they take control of them mentally, emotionally, and psychologically as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll,
so
they'll make them dangerous to you as well, because those children will hurt you when you try to save
yeah.
them.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that those kids were hurt, because I'm still in a bubble of confusion over my young cousin. And, you know, now that her mom is divorced from the stepfather, Desiree was found in Markham in the garage. She had been raped, drugged, and throat slit. But now, the mom, she was talking about how she had tried, but, you know, I've got questions on that, too. But she was saying that they stayed in arguments. It was always, every time she would try to come to her or help her, it was always a fight would ensue of some sort, you know. And this is a 14 or 15-year-old child, you know. So it started way before the 14 to 15-year-olds, you know, because this little girl had problems.
But that's how they get to them, because that window of tension, you know, between those preteens and teens is when a teenager is going to conflict with their own parents. And so then they
mm-hmm.
come as the savior and the rescuer.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I'm
so sad.
You know,
I hate my mom.
One of the things mm-hmm. the state, you know, you got Department of Children and Family Services, but do they have a department that's dedicated to saving these children. And does the state police have one? And, you know, I mean, it's just common sense. You know, we got mm-hmm. people. If you have a road down the highway and you'll see the state police stopping these transfer trucks to weigh them, right? The weight station,
right,
they have them
right.
all over. If the guy got too much weight. If we can have a weight station for a transfer truck, and why won't we have a special department within the state police or within DCFS or within state government to deal with what we're dealing with? We're out here at we're shooting from the hip on it. You got I'm run into so many individuals in the last few years who are trying to save children, and we're all
mm-hmm.
doing it as best we can. And there's nothing
right.
that we don't have anywhere to go to but to each other. We go to each other for
That's
advice.
Right.
We go to each other for information about what's happening in a certain town, where is it safe to go, when is it safe to go. I've had individuals come go with me. I've had police officers who were off duty, especially
mm-hmm.
in Harvey, because at one point Harvey was terrible. And I've had off-duty Harvey policemen come go with me to help save a child who didn't want
mm-hmm.
their own department to know what they were doing. And in several instances, I'm certain, and I haven't documented or proven this, but I'm certain from what I've observed that some people in the department of rank knew what was happening, and that's why they couldn't go to their superiors to help us help this child. So until we get some real help on a state level,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it's sort of frustrating. You look at the state, and I used to work for DCFS for 27 years as a child protection worker, and I know
mm-hmm.
that you need a unit. And these are dedicated unit, trained individuals to help these kids. It's not some, you know, I mean, we could do what we do, but it
mm-hmm.
needs to be a real department. They need to have training. They need to have all the equipment and the resources. And you got to be able to pull these children out of this and get them some real help. They're not, sending them home is not the answer most of the time.
No.
Now,
in
some cases, if the people snatch them and you get them back to their family, if you get them quick enough, they'll be all right.
Mm-hmm.
But if they've been indoctrinated in, you know, for real, they don't
right,
want to get
right.
out of there. You're not,
uh-uh.
in their minds, you're not saving them. You're hurting them. You're taking them away
right.
from all the little things that they've been given that they like to have. And the only thing they're given, they feel, is their body.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they don't feel their body is worth what we might feel, you know, that their dignity is worth. They're trading
mm-hmm.
their body for clothes and money and drugs sometimes, you know, acceptance and what they think is concern and love by these people. And we're coming
mm-hmm.
in there trying to send them back to the norm, make them go back to school, make them be back in a home where their resources are really low, you know, where they don't get these things. The only thing that's really going to change this is a real dedicated effort by the state police and the Department of Children and Family Services, which it really rests on the legislature and the governor. You don't hear the government talking about child sex trafficking.
No, not at all. Not at all. Not at all. When I met
nobody's
with Governor Pritzker, I asked him about sex trafficking and Kim Fox. But nothing. There's no noise. You're right. Not enough noise being made, but it's a lot of tears being shed.
But you've seen that kid, that 10-year-old in Calumet City, how they were having sex with her and delivering her back at home. It's just such a breakdown in the family structure. How is a grown man having sex with a 10-year-old, taking that 10-year-old back at home, and then the family's not alarmed? If it wasn't for those hotel workers that just knew it just wasn't right. And then, and even with that, and the police came and took the girl back to her house. Didn't even arrest the man at first. Until it became, you know, the Western media got involved. So it's really, it's so widespread, it's hard to pinpoint it. So everybody gets to ignore it, so to speak.
Well, you have to wonder, what did the parents get out of that? See,
yes.
You got to go for real. You got to really look at it, you know. One of the things I used to do at DCFS, if a woman had some issue, you know, with her child, she didn't know where it was or this or that, I would ask her, at what point in time in the last 10 years did you not know where your purse was?
Yeah.
And you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
See, we got to get real. We got to get real with it. And we all know what real is versus this make-believe.
Yeah.
You know, and we would not tolerate on anything that's near and dear to us. We would not tolerate this behavior. And we wouldn't be glad-handing it with politicians who are not looking at this, because it could be the main thing that the perpetrator in a sex trafficking needs is to be ignored. Mm-hmm. That's the main thing they need. And that's what our cities and police departments and the governor and the legislature and all that, that's what they do. They're ignoring it. And therefore, they are enabling it.
Mm-hmm.
That's just
that's
the truth. And, you know, people might not like that, but that's just the truth as I see it.
Well, now, do you see part of the solution is that we need to educate kids more? So, you know, like back in the day when they had DARE, so kids would know to say no, or kids would know to, if you know, if you see something, say something. How do we help get to the, you
we
know, because, you know, even
at,
in my school, I bring it up,
but
you know, and
the
they...
We need to get to the people with the pockets. See, they got a
that's
lot
right.
of money they spend. We need to get to the people with the power, the governor, the legislature, the Black Caucus. And oddly enough, you know, because I'm an African-American, I see more of it in Blacks and Hispanics. But I've had the same situations with young white kids. You know, mm-hmm. they get in it on a different level, but it's the same thing. They're being exploited. Now, the governor, you know, prove that there's no problem, governor, mm-hmm. Black caucus. Y'all prove that there's no problem. Prove that we're making it up, if that's what you want to. Because I don't understand why you wouldn't do something. We're doing something about everything else. We're getting lost now in we marching and we're fighting about what happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Well, that's fine. We need to know that. We need to educate everybody about that. But what about the stuff that's happening right now to these kids? Spend some of this money that you get from the taxes and the toll road and all this other mess, you know, spend some of this money, put a dedicated unit together, and at least study it. I don't even know, have they even bothered to study child sex trafficking in Illinois? Is
no,
there a study?
They
I haven't
have
been
not.
Able to find one.
No, they have
well,
not.
That would be a question for the University of Chicago, because they don't want to study everything.
Yeah,
right,
maybe
they have not. And you notice at every large Super Bowl game, after every Super Bowl game, these
that's
big
sure
games
is
when a lot of sex trafficking happens. You know, they arrest
right.
a lot of men during the Super Bowl every year. There's a big arrest. And, you know, prostitution, but sex trafficking is also a major part of the Super Bowl. It's money.
And that same thing happening out of that, what do they call this thing, Lollapalooza?
Yeah.
Now, that is the thing. See, all the state would have to do is put, you know, the same way. When you know, years ago, before they legalized pot, you couldn't smoke a joint nowhere without getting caught. Put
that's
some of the
right.
same undercover agents. I'm serious. Put some of the same undercover efforts towards catching people that are engaged in sex trafficking with minors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go to something like that Lollapalooza. Go to a place in Chicago. Go out there to some of these amusement parks, the Super Bowl game. Go there. Go to the Bulls games and stuff. Go, you know, you're not going to find too many of them messing around with baseball for some reason. But they will catch some people if they try. But if you don't try to catch them,
and
you don't,
so
you know, you don't put an effort on it.
But it's so worldwide to look at Epstein and all those really rich people and how it's coming out about them sex trafficking. The thing
right.
is just, it's such a vague thing, it's hard to focus on. How does, you know, where do you start? Where do you zero in on it? That's what I'm saying. So do you educate the kids themselves? Because it's just
no,
so
I think
widespread.
You need to put the pressure on the state of Illinois. That's where the buck stops. These
but it's
children,
so much bigger than Illinois, though. It's so much bigger than Illinois.
Pardon me?
It's so
I'm
much bigger than just the state of Illinois.
Well,
but both parents and child need to be educated. The school system needs to be educated. You know, the school system is backwards, too, because as a retired teacher, we were not privy to the kids' medical records. You know, yet and still, Johnny is sitting in front of me. I need to know if he had some type of disease or disorder, but the teachers are not privy to those medical forms. those medical records. How crazy is that? So the school
and that means
system
you need to
be educated.
Well, in order to get that done, you're going to have, in my opinion, you're going to have to put pressure on the people in charge, and that goes back to the legislature and the governor. Once he
right.
has to address it, he hasn't spoken about it. You know, it's almost like this situation with the Republicans in the Senate. If you can ignore what happened on November 6th, then you ain't got to deal with it.
Right,
they're ignoring
right.
on a state yeah. level. They're
January.
Ignoring this problem. They're ignoring
but
the
now,
problem.
But now, you know, our school don't do much right. But at our school now, there is, I mean, it's low-key. It's not a big deal. But our school is on the alert for that. So we do
that's
have.
That's because you're there. That's because you're there.
Right.
See, that's
just
what
yeah.
I'm talking about. That's because you're there. Mm-hmm. You know, you're saving kids you probably don't even know about because you
yeah.
make it a point of knowing about this and sharing information. But if nobody is sharing it, and think about what would happen if the governor just got on television and said, you know, we're going to do a study on child sex trafficking in the state of Illinois and put some dedicated resources to that. And then when,
yeah,
you know, in 6 months or something, come back and give the public a report.
Mm-hmm,
had a state
mm-hmm.
police investigate it. Do it for real. That's all it would really take. When you say what is needed, that's what's needed. If the words are never coming out of his mouth, you know, all this window dressing and stuff about we care about black people and Black Lives Matter and all that, that's fine. How do you make it matter if you don't put the resources there on a very pragmatic
exactly.
and specific level? It's just words.
But you know what? To me, that goes along the line, like Father Flake said today in his, you know, his first speech back at church. Father said, you know, of course, he's talking about the guns and the violence, but I'm thinking this is the same thing here about this sex trafficking. He said he's getting ready to come out with both guns blazing because it's like the state, the government, and the federal government was all hands on deck, both feet in with COVID. Then he says, then, okay, so we need to be all hands on deck, both feet in on, and like I said, his thing is the gun violence. And so I'm thinking the same thing. If the government put, you know, sometimes you just have to put people on notice. You
yes,
know, just put
yes.
the state of Illinois on notice that this is a zero tolerance state for abusing our children, period. We will come
right.
after you with both guns blazing. And then once you start
right.
that PR, that makes a difference too.
Yeah,
because,
I think that's
you know,
the key to
because
it.
People do what they could get away with. You know,
so
and another thing is the young girl that was found in the freezer. Now, that has just been squashed, you know. See,
but
for me, that was
I think that's
case
a little
of sex
different because that has more to do with her. That's a, even though it still needs to be taken, investigated, but that's a little different when you and your peer group go beyond what you should be doing at your age. What Taylor's speaking of and what, you know, there's innocent kids that did not make a decision to go to a party, that do not think
well,
they know.
Well, that was still a sex trafficking situation because she was set up by her friends. It was her car. They left her. They left that hotel in her car without her. It was her
yeah,
car.
I understand that.
You know,
I understand that. Yeah.
It's not like I'm gonna take your car. So that's still a form of sex trafficking, even though they've been partying there. But that's still a form of sex trafficking, which she was set up by her peers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
yeah.
something has to be done. And you're right. Maybe a call and a meeting with the governor is needed, since he's saying he's not going to run again. See what happens with these politicians? They
well, when did he say that? When did Prisco say he wasn't running again?
He said he wasn't going to run when he first ran, and so he hasn't made the final decision. He made a statement that he's going to talk with his wife on maybe not running for another term as governor because it's a lot of work. But
you know, one of the things we have to look at, it doesn't matter who the governor is. We need to hold the governor's office accountable,
exactly,
not an individual.
Exactly.
He can run or not run or whatever. We need to hold those offices accountable, just like the firemen got to go to a fire. There are things that the governor should do, and one of those things is help protect the children. And if you won't even study it, now they'll spend a whole bunch of money studying something we don't care about, how you put a boot on a car in downtown Chicago and why I stay on there for such a period of time or something. But why don't they study child sex trafficking in the state of Illinois? Now, that's a very simple statement of sentence, few words joined together. But if the person presented that to the governor in sufficient numbers or the right person, he'd have to deal with that.
Yeah.
See, what you think about it, which community organization do we have that's ever even spoken about it?
None.
I can't find anybody. It's sort of like we're the Underground Railroad for these kids. Now, come
exactly.
on. That's what I feel like when I'm out there by myself, hoping that don't nothing happen to me or the kids. I feel
right.
just like they must have felt Harriet Tubman or somebody trying to get somebody from point A to point B, and there wasn't
right.
nobody there to help you. So who you going to call?
Right. And then when you mentioned it, well, it has to happen to me. You know, if that was our situation. Well, when it hits your front door, then what? From the North Shore to the South Shore to your front door, it hit our front door. And we have talked about it forever. But there's no follow-up. And then the parents want to act like, I can't believe it. But we're telling you, constantly telling you what's going on. But, yeah, I'm all for writing a letter to the governor and asking him to speak out on this before he decides not to run or whoever. Because when these
right.
politicians get in front of our faces, we ask the wrong questions. We're so busy trying to see if they're going to be our friend or shake our hand. And I'm not all for that. I want to know, you know, we got to ask the right question about the ex-felon population, about the sex trafficking. These are questions that have to be asked, and that's what we have to do.
I think it can be done. If we approach it with the same diligence that we try to save one of these kids that we don't know, most of the time we don't know none of these people, and we'll go out our way to try to help them. And whatever way we can, we're going to try to help. If we put that same effort, because there's a bunch of people out here doing this, trying to help.
Yes.
I'm serious. To me, it's like trying to get somebody out of slavery into Canada or something. You know, we're out here by ourselves using our own resources, and we many times, even people don't want to admit it, we risk our lives.
Yeah.
Don't mess around and get between these people and their money.
But if you guys are boots on the street, why don't you start with your local elected officials, with every community that you know is happening there?
They won't do anything. They know as much about this as we do. It's got to come from the top down. Just like, you know, any order that comes up out of the top, from the top down, it's got power.
Yeah.
You create
yeah.
a unit,
that part.
It's got power. You know, they got the gang task force unit. They got the unit that you can't sell cigarettes without them being in a label. You know, the guy got killed because he's selling cigarettes one at a time. There was somebody came and arrested him and killed him. Bopped cigarettes, right? You got power from the top down. Put a unit together that, and first, before you do anything, you got to know what you're doing. So you need to study child sex trafficking in the state of Illinois. And I haven't seen anybody that has done it. And until they do it, it's going to be a big elephant in the room, but it's a big invisible elephant in the room. And that's what we got. Now, whether we deal with it or not, it's going to depend on, you know, when we put people in the offices, we don't never ask them about it. When you try to raise it, it's like you're uncouth, you're asking a crazy question or something, or it doesn't happen.
Exactly.
And then, like you said, let
it
happen close to home, though.
But back in the day, you know, they used to try to educate. You know, they have people scouting and paying attention at the Greyhound bus station for this very thing. But now with the cyber, you know, the Greyhound bus station is no longer the pickup point because so many things happen on the Internet.
That's right.
But
they can bust that. They can bust it.
They
got to
have
dedicated.
The Uber.
Somebody
got to
be dedicated.
It's a part of the transportation thing, too. You know, sex trafficking happens in those. One of our associate's son his son's in high school, and she had sent an Uber for him to pick him up from school at 14 or 15 years old, but the Uber driver decided he was going to take him into the alley. It just so happened he was smart enough to call his mom and get away, you know. But parents are just so free. They want their kids to grow up so fast and want all this damn independence. But independence is killing our kids.
Let me ask you this. If the governor decided that this was important enough to deal with, any governor, the first thing they would do is they would communicate with the teachers' union and the teachers, and they would find a way to teach this. They would use these colleges and universities with all these people with all these degrees. They ought to be able to figure out how you can tell somebody a hot stove is hot, right? So get them and you learn, and then you stand behind the teachers. You teach them exactly what to do and stand behind them. It's not the teacher's job to say to children. It's our job. It's everyone in the state, including the leaders, the governor, the legislature. It's their job, but they got to empower the people. The reason we pay these taxes is so that they have the resources to empower people to provide police protection, roads, all the stuff that they do. So they've got the money. We give them the money. They'll want some more money in a minute for something anyway. Why don't we to make them understand that we want to protect our children? Once they do a study on child sex trafficking, they will find out why it works. There's a reason why it works.
Quick before we get out. Now, one thing I'm going to tell you about these school systems, because you know I'm in the school system and I'm a busybody. When you start, and I watch patterns, and when you watch kids that's uncomfortable or having problems, and you try to address it or bring it to the school system, the first thing they do is try to put the gag order on the adult, like in my case. I've been threatened a million. I've been threatened to be fired. I've been threatened to be rolled up because that's not your business. That's not your lane. You know, we have social
workers
for that.
That's why you
got
to get it from the top. You got to get the governor to say it's okay. Once it's okay, it's okay. To ask those questions.
Well, guys, this has been a hot topic, and I want to thank both of you. I want to thank you, Rhonda B. Woods, my sister, friend, girl, and I want to thank you, Jane Taylor from Taylor Publications, because we can go on and have a discussion about so much stuff every week but these issues need to be addressed. And I'm going to look forward to reaching out to Al Penn about that airport. I'm going to look into see what we can do with the governor on this issue of sex trafficking, because it's not going away. It's getting worse. But I want to thank you both for being on In the Know with Mo.
And as always, it's a delight to hear your voice, Mr. James Taylor. We used to be hanging out buddies, but I haven't seen you in years.
Yeah, it's been rough. You be good.
Well,
be safe here. Love y'all.
Okay be blessed.
Bye. We started out with Pembroke and we ended up with sex trafficking. There's issues that needs to be addressed, and it's up to us to make everyone accountable for the lives of our young people. I want to thank James Taylor of Taylor Publications, of City News, and also Rhonda B. Woods, a photojournalist and educator. Until then, stay focused and be blessed.